We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
Would you walk us through a typical day?
Burger King, Wendy's, and McDonald's.
Stop spending!
I'm president, and you're not.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people representing it from time to time.
I am proud to shut down the government. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I don't think he's a smart person, but he's got a loud voice.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
I got this this fly buzzing around my head right now here in the home studio. I'm trying to, yeah. That damn thing has been flying around now almost, I don't know what, about 17 hours. That's all I know. By the way, we have some breaking news here. Salt Lake City, Utah. Antifa communists are celebrating a major win after one of their distinguished members, Buzzy the Fly, landed on Mike Pence's head and distracted debate viewers for a few minutes. Researchers determined that Buzzy is the latest member of Salt Lake City Antifa. Buzzy is one of our most dedicated anti-fascist resistance fighters, said Vandex Kraxavag, chairperson of the local Antifa chapter. Not only is the smartest and best-looking member, but the dedicated majority of their 28 lifespan to infiltrating the debate hall and planning his attack. Plans were underway to have Buzzy infiltrate the virtual presidential debate and land on Trump's webcam, but were unfortunately canceled after Buzzy met an untimely death. According to witnesses, he ran headlong into a flying brick that was being thrown through a glass window. Antifa's Twitter account later broke the news saying, "Buzzy's dead. We offer up our thoughts and prayers to nobody during this tragic time. Pour out a vegan milkshake for our beloved comrade, Buzzy." I love the Babylon Bee. The Babylon Bee is a satirical site that people sometimes think is real. And now we have, well, let me comment first and foremost on the debate, because this is actually, I think, what the media is looking for right now, and that's for a distraction. The president kind of gave him that this morning anyway with some tweets, but that's another story. But you have now all this focus on the fly that landed on Mike Pence's head instead of the substance of the actual debate itself. The ratings just came out for the debate, by the way, and they were, I had to actually think for a minute. All right, Dave, I'm going to ask you a question just real quick here, okay? You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Can't tell you what it is because I need, all right, you need to answer quickly. Hillary Clinton's running mate in 2016. Go.
Tim something. Tim Kaine. Yeah. That's it. Ah.
Yes. But you had to think about it a little bit, right?
I did, yeah. He's even local to some extent, right?
Well, here's the deal. You know, like he went to Mizzou, but then he's a KU fan. That as you remember, Dave, when he was announced on the ticket, I hear he's a nice enough guy and everything, and he's got some Mizzou connections, but he's a KU fan. So I don't care what happens in any, I don't care if you're Republican, you're Democrat, no matter, that is an instant disqualifier. For me, it's an instant. I don't care who it would be. I wouldn't vote for them at all. But yeah, it was Tim Kaine. You had, let's see here, much larger audience than the one in 2016. 50 million viewers. That's a big audience across the four broadcast networks and the three cable news channels. So I thought that Mike Pence did a pretty good job. If I'm, you know, being completely honest, which I like to do, the dude is boring. You know, maybe that's what the country needs right now, but he always starts with, he's always thanking people and looking at the camera. But on the issue of substance, I saw a couple of headlines this morning, and I shouldn't be stunned anymore, in the Washington Post about things that Mike Pence said that may have been erroneous when you couldn't have Kamala Harris answer a simple question about court packing. Now, that's probably, let's be honest, that's the strategy. Because then you can't have the New York Times, the Washington Post, or CNN, or anyone focus on court packing. They don't want to do that. They're going to focus on the fly. You don't answer the question. You don't give any ammo. But back to the fly, just because I kind of find the fly interesting. And I'm gonna buy into the distraction this afternoon, because now there are calls for Lorne Michaels at Saturday Night Live to bring Jeff Goldblum back to play the fly on Saturday Night Live this weekend. Dave, do we have any sound effects from Jeff Goldblum as the fly?
Insects don't have politics. They're very brutal. No compassion. No compromise. We can't trust the insect. I'd like to become the first insect politician.
Well, I have a feeling that, I don't know, it seems almost too obvious that Jeff Goldblum would some, he's kind of a weird dude, kind of keeps to himself, but we'll see. You also have already, and I wish I was, somebody told me this morning, I think there was a Twitter account, David, you following the Twitter account, that was like, you know, the instant that this happened, somebody put up a Twitter account that has now, I think, more than 100,000 followers. There is a white Pence wig with a built-in critter that's now available for purchase online just in time for Halloween. Yeah, there's a, let's see, one page, Mike Pence's fly. That's a cover photo of the fly waving a Biden-Harris sign. Yeah, people are going crazy with the fly. But I think that the vice president did fairly well last night, but it doesn't matter. Okay. I don't think it matters from this perspective. Nobody's mind was changed. Look, you're never going to have any fair assessment of these two candidates if nobody's going to ask questions about Kamala Harris and her record as attorney general in the state of California, which is fine with me. It's probably fine with Mike Pence. I don't think it would be fine with a lot of the people that support the Democratic Party. She put a lot of people behind bars. She put a lot of people of color behind bars. And she tends to get a pass on that right now, because that could be a distraction that could help Trump. And then you go back to the president, sort of, you know, he keeps tweeting. I am going to agree with him on one thing. Now, because of the COVID diagnosis and everything else, and by the way, there's a story right now. This won't help the president. I'm sure he'll have something to say. Mitch McConnell says, this is a story that just cleared right before I was going on the air here. Mitch McConnell says, yeah, you know what? I've been avoiding the White House for months because I didn't like their COVID policies. I thought it was too risky. So, you know, whatever it is. But the suggestion is now that there's a virtual debate. Dave, let's play the audio of the president here on the virtual debate, because the idea of a virtual debate is just kind of silly, and that's what the president said.
Mark, as you know, there's a lot of audio, so I'm trying to find that clip.
Yeah,
right,
there
now
is a lot of audio, Dave. And sometimes I, you know, I don't know if I told you and I gave you the heads up that we're going to play that, so that's okay. I know we have. Listen, Dave and I go over audio every afternoon, and he sends me a picture of the file since I'm still doing the show at home. And when that happens, you know, we go through all the audio. But today we had two pages of that. All right, here's the president on the virtual debate.
I heard that the commission a little while ago changed the debate style. And that's not acceptable to us. I beat him easily in the first debate, according to the polls that I've seen. But I beat him easily. I felt I beat him easily. I think he felt it, too. No, I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate. That's not what debating is all about. You sit behind a computer and do a debate. It's ridiculous. And then they cut you off whenever they want.
Well, two things about that. One, I don't think I saw one poll that said the president won that first debate. Secondly, he's right about that. I mean, it's just kind of silly to even suggest that. I hope they don't do it, and I hope he does stay out if that's what happens. Here is the former RNC chair, the former White House chief of staff turned media celebrity, and my old friend from the state of Wisconsin when I was there, Reince Priebus.
Debates should be face-to-face. I mean, they should find a way to do this face-to-face, whether it's a, you know, put them both in two different rooms that are next to each other. You could see, you know, Big Brother does it on CBS.
Yeah.
So I think they can figure out a way to do it.
All these years, I've known Reince for about 20, maybe almost 20 years now. Never knew he was a Big Brother fan. All right, we're off and running here for a Friday. No, it's Thursday. Thursday edition of the show, getting a little ahead of myself. By the way, we do have a roundtable tomorrow. State Rep Mary Elizabeth Coleman, Lewis Reed, the Aldermanic Board President, Jane Duker, all on the panel tomorrow. Bunch of things that are going on. I meant to do it here in the start. There is a crazy arrest in Michigan, a plot to kidnap the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, and it's being called a right-wing militia, even though one of the guys arrested is on tape clearly stating he wants to get rid of the police and he's an anarchist. So let's watch how that one develops. John Hancock, Mike Kelly going to join me here in just a couple of minutes. They'll run down the debate. There's going to be an opportunity this afternoon. I'm going to take some calls on a topic related to COVID. And in a suburb of Milwaukee last night called Wauwatosa, which is sort of like Webster Kirkwood. That's maybe the best comparison. However, it's a little different, only that Wauwatosa borders the city of Milwaukee. Well, there was violence there last night after there was a refusal to charge a police officer. And it's an undercover story, and it got kind of nasty up there. So we'll talk about that in the next hour with my buddy Dan O'Donnell. We're off and running. Like I said, it's a Thursday edition of the Mark Reardon Show, with flies buzzing around everywhere. Oh, we're going to talk about stink bugs. So we have flies and stink bugs, all kinds of things to cover this afternoon on KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
I want the American people to know that from the very first day, President Donald Trump has put the health of America first.
Whatever the vice president is claiming the administration has done, clearly it hasn't worked. When you're looking at over 210,000 dead bodies in our country, American lives that have been lost, families that are grieving that loss.
Let's handicap the debate, kind of run it down with our good buddies Mike Kelly and John Hancock this afternoon. Gentlemen, how are you? Welcome back to the program. I'm assuming you're on tomorrow morning, right?
That's correct.
Right. Yeah. Mike, I'll start with you here. And, you know, I guess what I said was, you know, obviously we have different perspectives on these things. I thought Mike Pence did pretty well. I also think he's kind of boring. I don't know, you know, if it changed any minds. I just don't think there was any impact overall on the election. Do you disagree on that front or not?
No, I actually thought the debate was quite boring as well. It changed any. I didn't think it changed anybody's minds. And I really think that's a problem for the president, because if polling is anywhere close to being somewhat correct, the president has to make up some ground here, and a draw really is not a victory for him.
John?
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think many minds were changed. Now, I will say this. There were two groups of people potentially that this debate could have been useful for. One of them are traditional conservatives who are not enamored with Donald Trump's style and maybe even some of his policies. And I could see those folks listening to Mike Pence, who really is a movement conservative, taking some comfort in that. And the other group I thought about were folks on the far left, where neither Biden nor Harris has fessed up to packing the Supreme Court. That's something the left wants to hear. And so I don't know that she achieved anything on that end, but it was, you know, it was a boring debate. Thank the Lord. And, you know, I think it went about as well as it could have gone for both sides.
What do you think, John? I'll start with you on the president. Look, I think this notion of a virtual debate is kind of silly at this point. Do you think that that's actually going to, well, the president says he's not going to go if it's a virtual debate.
Yeah, it's not a debate at that point, and it's just a joint appearance of some sort. You know, you've got to have the two people in a room. Now, the president's got to be clear of the virus in order for the debate to work, so maybe they have to delay it, but I don't think a virtual debate does anybody any good.
Kelly,
I agree with that, and if I'm the Biden campaign, the fact that the president doesn't want a debate is a good thing. Because again, I'll go back to the fact that the president really has to do some making up. I'm with you, Mark. I listened to your first segment. No polling that I've seen shows that anybody with, a rational mind thought the president won that debate. He's only going to have a couple more times to be able to try to woo some of those never Trumpers who may have some problems with what, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris may be up to. And I don't think this is going to spell good for the president to not be debating. He needs the exposure.
I'm going to ask a question here. You guys are going to know this, but I just want you to see. This is candidate A, okay? Candidate A is going to be the first candidate. Candidate B is going to be the second candidate. You pick. So candidate A is plus 8 this time of year, plus 10, plus 7, plus 14, plus 5, plus 11. Candidate B is plus 9, plus 12, plus 12, plus 11, plus 16. Who is Joe Biden and who is Hillary Clinton?
Hillary was candidate A. Joe Biden's candidate B.
Nice! Yep. Good pickup there. But the point is that those numbers are very similar. Now, people keep asking me this question. This is very dangerous, guys. And we were all together on election night. Remember that well. 4 years ago. But
I'm still in therapy, Mark.
I think a lot of people are. But look, I've firmly believed, as many listeners know, that I didn't think there was a chance in hell that Donald Trump was going to win the election because of the Electoral College, not because I didn't think he had a groundswell of support and that union workers. I mean, we learned a lot that summer. I just didn't think the map was even possible. Now, so people ask me all the time, what's going to happen? You know, I had a friend this morning. What do you think's going to happen? I personally feel, I'm not making a prediction because I failed on those. But I think that Biden is going to wipe the floor with him on the electoral map. But good Lord, I have no idea, John, because the polls were very similar 4 years ago. I don't know what's going to happen in the next few weeks. The one thing I think is important, and some people don't believe polling, I still do. All Joe Biden really has to do is get 1% more votes in some of those. That's it. Just 1% more in Pennsylvania, you know, Michigan, and then he wins the race.
You know, what we know about campaigns, we know about it in hindsight. And every campaign at a certain point breaks. And you don't know exactly when the breaking point it was until you're through Election Day and you look back. But I suspect that that first presidential debate may have been the breaking point in this race. And the national poll numbers, whether they're 9 or 12 or 14, are somewhat irrelevant. What is different in 2020... in the polling from 2016, is that pretty consistently in the battleground states, Trump is not down by 2 or 3 points. He's down by 7, 8, and 9 points. And that is different this year from 2016.
Yeah, Mike, I'm guessing you would agree with that because I see some of that too in the state polling.
Right. And in both elections, both in 2016 and 2020, the president ran a base vote campaign. He's really not trying to woo people. He's trying to energize them. John always talks about the didn't like either, but a lot of people didn't like either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, and when forced to chose Donald Trump. We see in polling right now people who don't like Joe Biden and Donald Trump, they're breaking to Joe Biden. You couple that with the fact that, guys, the president's out of money. He is not on TV in any of these battleground states. Everything he is doing is being left to Twitter and third-party groups for a base vote thing where he needs to woo voters. I think while 2016 is a fair comparison and a good benchmark to look at, I think it's a completely different world. We also have 4 years of a record to look at.
John, I did not know that, what Mike just said about the TV ads. Is that true? In your opinion, is that would seem problematic?
Well, I know they were close to broke. I don't know what their media buying situation is right now, and I've not. I mean, they could well be that they're dark, but I don't know that to be true. But you know, Michael talked about the double haters, the voters that don't like either one of them, and that's
I think there's a lot of them.
And he is right about the analysis. You know, Trump won that group by 31 points in 16, and he's losing it now to Joe Biden by double digits. That's a real problem, particularly in those battleground states.
You know, I think there's a couple of things that are at work with people. I firmly believe there are going to be people that are going to vote for Donald Trump that aren't going to admit it to anyone, and they'll pull the trigger. But I also think there are a lot more people who just will not be able to vote for either of these candidates. They'll want to vote on their local issues for, you know, Senate or House of Representatives or State Senate. And this is what I did in 2016. I wrote in, you know, a friend of mine from Wisconsin, maybe pull the trigger for the Libertarian candidate. Now, I'm fairly confident that Republicans are going to do well and the president's going to win Missouri, so maybe inconsequential. But I just wonder how many of those people affect, because those are still voters. But if they're peeling back from the presidential race, will it have an impact? Will there be that many voters to really impact it in that category?
I don't know. You know, it depends on what those voters would typically be predicted to do. My sense is that the base in both parties is pretty fired up. They're pretty jazzed. I mean, there could be some folks in the middle that just don't vote or vote for a third party and throw their presidential vote away. I don't suspect that that's
going to
be...
Still small numbers, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be difference-making anywhere.
You know, one thing, though, and I just quickly before we get you guys out of here, the one thing that I will say, and this is what I've been telling the people who are Trump supporters when I talk to them, just friends and everything, the enthusiasm gap I still think is real. And there was that gap existed with Hillary Clinton because she was disliked. But even in this situation, Martha Raddatz, ABC News, took a trip across the country and she said, look, I'm seeing a lot more support enthusiasm for Donald Trump than Joe Biden. On the other hand, I've also heard stories of even in the boot heel of Missouri and elsewhere, not that, again, Trump's going to lose Missouri, that where you saw those signs 4 years ago, they're not there as much. So, you know, some of this is anecdotal, so I don't know what to believe.
Yeah, I've seen signs for Biden and Galloway and St. Charles and Old Town St. Charles. Would have never in my entire life, having grown up in St. Charles, seen that. Seeing in the urban area here, Biden, I don't really see much of Trump at all. Then I was at the Lake of the Ozarks a month ago, and I thought, wow, what an alternate universe I'm living in. But I can tell you with great certainty the president's not going to be winning the state of Missouri by double digits.
I don't think he will this time either. John Hancock, Mike Kelly, we'll hear you tomorrow morning. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much, as always.
You bet. See ya.
2:30, we're going to come back. I have some COVID questions I want to pose to you. Take some phone calls this afternoon, so hang on for that.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Oh, man. You know, I barely could keep my eyes open. In fact, I fell asleep right when Manny Machado made the last, I think Manny Machado made the last out last night for the Padres, and they were threatening, man. They had a chance, and Cody Bellinger robbed Fernando Tatis Jr. of what would have been a home run, I think, in Dodger Stadium or Petco because of the deep, you know, the deep center field gaps down in Texas. But man, that was an exciting game last night. Kevin Wheeler will be here. We'll talk a little baseball later this afternoon. So I saw a tweet from Charlie Brennan, and perhaps I should have been dialed into this. You know, we always celebrate anniversaries at KMOX, and Charlie had tweeted earlier, congratulations to the legendary at Fred Bottomer, KMOX, our health and religion editor, and health, that's like, you know, it's one of his 15 titles. Mark Reardon Show executive producer, that's probably the least favorite of his title, who has completed 38 years at the Mighty Mox, an incredible run. His reports are picked up by stations across the country, a true MVP, which is all true, by the way. But then Kenny Wallace saw that. Our buddy Kenny, Fred, did you see what he did here? He tweeted out,
how
what?
About Fred Bottomer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
Fred Bottomer is retiring? You will be missed, Fred. You are a St. Louis legend. We love you. So that, you know, people start to pick up on that. And were you getting messages, Fred? People thinking you were giving it up?
Boy, I got to tell you, I was at home last night watching the debate when this first started coming up. And I saw Charlie's original tweet and I showed it to my wife and said, hey, I guess I've just passed 38 years. I didn't really even think about it. And then all of a sudden, further in the debate, my phone started dinging a lot. And I, you know, I watched the whole debate. I didn't think about it until it was over. And I looked and I had 99 Facebook messages from people that all think, you know, the way Charlie said it, completed my 38th year. Either sounds like I was getting paroled or I was retiring. So I guess some people interpreted it that I was going to retire, which is not the case. And I thank everyone for their kindness and all the nice words they've been you know, saying about me. It's like reading my own obituary. No truth to it. I have had a lot of people getting in touch with me, though, thinking that I'm retiring.
I mean, that, and I didn't see Kenny's. I saw Charlie's earlier this morning, but I didn't see Kenny's tweet until just a few minutes ago, and I sent it to you guys not knowing. I thought it was new. I didn't know it was from last night, but that's pretty funny. But you're staying put for now, right, Fred?
I'm here as long as you are, Mark.
Appreciate that. I was trying to get Dave to pop me down so I could cough because I don't have the mute button. I don't know if that worked very effectively. Well, you sent panic into the minds of the Fred Bottomer friends out there. All right, 2:40 at KMOX. I'm not going to figure out what I'm going to do here. Let me try to do this on the topic of COVID and see if we can squeeze some phone calls in here. when the president got out of Walter Reed the other day, and I want to address this from a couple of different perspectives. Dave, let's play the audio of what he said, and I want to play Alex Berenson and his response, because I'll piggyback off that. But the president, of course, his message was, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of COVID.
Don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it. You're going to beat it. And I know there's a risk, there's a danger, but that's okay. And now I'm better, and maybe I'm immune. I don't know. But don't let it dominate your lives. Get out there. Be careful.
All right. So Alex Berenson said this. Alex has been a guest on the show, and I thought that he, I don't know if I agree with this completely, but I'll let you hear what he said first of all.
I want to say something about what the president said today, what he tweeted today, where he said, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. And
you can't say, hold on, you can't say that. I just want to issue a warning to our viewers. Of course, you should be terrified and on the brink of suicide. I just want to say that. Okay, go ahead.
That's right. I mean, that might be the most presidential thing this president has ever said. Okay, because here's what he's saying. He's not actually saying don't be afraid of COVID. He's saying don't be afraid of one another. Okay, because this is a respiratory virus. It spreads between people. And the only way to really make it go away permanently is to lock us all away permanently. And that can't happen. That is not compatible with life.
All right, so Alex is a former New York Times reporter, and he's a blogger now. He's got a website, alexberenson.com. And I actually, just as I was listening to his soundbite, I went to his Twitter, and he's got a pinned tweet at the top that says this, and this is kind of an interesting observation. Now, again, I think you almost have to preface this. I don't know why we still have to do this with and I'll just say my personal belief is that coronavirus is real. It's not a hoax. It's very infectious for high-risk people. It's very, very, very dangerous to some people. But for the most part, 99% plus people come out of it just fine. There are, obviously, there's some conditions. We don't know a lot about it. I don't even know why I have to say any of this right now, but you got people tuning in who are going to probably accuse me of saying it's a hoax, which I never have, because I don't think it is a hoax. But he said this, I have to say I find bizarre the blue check trope that real Donald Trump disrespected people who have died of COVID by saying we shouldn't fear it. 500,000 Americans. 500,000 Americans, including this week, Eddie Van Halen. Now I'm adding a little bit around the edges here, like that part. 500,000 Americans die of cancer every year. No one says the Stand Up to Cancer campaign is wrong or minimizes their anguish. So thinking about those two things, and you know, I don't know about the comment about maybe I'm immune. That's sort of a different topic, but I was on the phone last night with a friend of mine from Kansas City, and I think we all talk to friends, and I'm even experiencing some of this with some of my daughter's friends. We had she's a Girl Scout now, at a Girl Scout meeting, and some of the kids are back in school. She's back in school in Rockwood. Some of the kids are not. They choose to stay at home. The parents want them at home. They're worried. Maybe they have high-risk people in the house, grandparents, whatever the situation is. Everyone has to make their own decision. But I'm on the phone with a friend of mine from Kansas City last night. We're talking about some of this stuff, trying our best to avoid politics, but clearly it comes up, and he starts talking about COVID, and he was really, really fearful, I think very fearful, and I hear this from people quite a bit. Now, he's not high risk. Maybe his wife is just a little bit, but I almost think there's, and this is the thing I sort of wanted to test out this afternoon on the phone lines, 436-7900. Maybe we can squeeze a couple people in here, Dave. I'm not afraid of COVID. So I agree with the president on the standpoint that you have to live your life and you have to be careful and you have to do the things that are going to make sure that you minimize risk. But if and I think a lot of the Democrats and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the rest, I don't see how they don't understand how damaging and dangerous a path is to keep people locked down for months and months and months. Because there's not only the tens of thousands of people who are dying from COVID, but there's the anxiety, depression, isolation, suicide, alcoholism, drug abuse, other diagnoses, which are not, I didn't pronounce that name right, did I, that are not going, or that are going unchecked, things along those lines. But then you have the other side, the fear porn, people who totally buy into the fear porn. I mean, they don't even want to go out of their houses almost. There are people like this. My wife has a cousin in Colorado. I'm begging my wife to take a trip out of town because she works too much. She's a workaholic, and she needs some time just to herself. And she's very close with her cousin. She doesn't have a big extended family. Her cousin doesn't want her out there. Like, she might meet her for lunch in Denver if she flies in. I'm like, are you kidding me? See, that's weird to me. That's extreme. There's nothing high risk with her situation at all. So is there a place in society for someone like me, for example, that thinks that that kind of isolation and that kind of fear is completely unwarranted? If you're doing things, you know, we all did the same thing in March. We walked around, put our shirts or a tissue on our hands, and we opened the door to the convenience store and we thought, oh man, are we going to get COVID? Because we didn't know. But now we know we're not getting it from surfaces, right? Is it airborne? Well, don't want to risk that as much indoors. But can we not move forward in many areas of our life? I was at a gym this morning for the first time in a long time. Felt pretty good. Wore a mask walking in the door. People work there. Club Fitness wearing a mask. Nobody else. Everyone working out. Everyone's fine, right? Let's see. Do I have someone? I can maybe take a call here before the break. Cindy, you're on KMOX. Go ahead.
Hi, Mark. Hey, listen, I am 66 years old, and I'm not afraid of it. And the president didn't upset me at all. I've been going to the gym now since it was open. No big, huge health problems. What we should be mad about is the media, because when we were closed down, the media made us sound like if we walked out of our door, we were going to get it and die. And that's what upset me.
Yeah, I mean, maybe some of that's true. I think that you have to remember that the country, there's no way that anyone could have been prepared for what happened in the second week of March. I don't think Dr. Fauci was prepared for that. We know that Andrew Cuomo was not prepared for that. We know that Bill de Blasio, Nancy Pelosi, and President Trump wasn't prepared for that, because this all came very, very quickly. We knew the risks. But let's face it, March 11th, when the president gave the speech and the NBA canceled, all those things on the 12th, the NCAA tournament, that's when things changed dramatically. We had no idea for weeks what we were really into. That was the point where, don't wear a mask. We need the masks for the healthcare workers. So for about a month and a half until May, there was a lot of confusion. And I think that some of that was warranted because we didn't know. We didn't know what we thought. You know, when you hear stories, and this is one of the things I tried to point out from the beginning, the virus lives on the New York subway for 3 days. Well, who cares? That's fine. If I believe that, if you tell me you're a scientist, that's separate from the issue of whether or not people are contracting the virus that way. And they're not, by the way. And I was right about that in the spring. 248. We're back with more in a moment.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
All right. I think we have time for one more phone call here before we get to the top of the hour. We're going to head to Milwaukee after the top of the hour. They had a lot of violence up there last night because of another police shooting case, and it's not being covered at all in the national news. We'll find out a little bit more about that with Dan O'Donnell after the top of the hour. He's up at WISN in Milwaukee. Let's go to John. You're next on KMOX. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing? I was just to tell you about my father, who had COVID about a month and a half ago. 87-year-old, Korean War veteran, type 2 diabetic, high blood pressure, and probably countless other pills he's on. I honestly thought, in like everybody did in the early spring, that, you know, if my father got it, he was probably done. But went to the doctor. He was asymptomatic. He got tested. Okay, he had it. And only thing he got was tired. You know, and I go, Dad, how can you tell if you're tired or just tired? He goes, just a little more tired. So it's
That's what's so weird about this thing.
And I stand with the president on that. It's, you know, both my kids got it. Once again, we had one asymptomatic. One had slight aches. And that was it. So it's, you know, it's different for everybody, but it's not the killer that everybody is so terrified of.
Well, thanks for the call, John. And I think we're going to talk a little bit here, Dr. Rachel Presti from WashU, because there's some interesting research on, in Eli Lilly announced yesterday, the antibody testing, which is working, and that's going to do a lot. But there's so many mysterious things still about this, you know, virus. And one of the things I'll talk to Dr. Presti about is, and I don't know how many of you have heard stories like this, a little different than what John said. And I've heard plenty of high-risk people. Look, if Chris Christie gets out of this thing, now he's in the hospital right now. I think there was a rumor that he was on a ventilator, and they've debunked that. But you'd have to be, well, I think a lot of people thought the president for sure was going to head down a bad track. And by the way, there's still the possibility of that, because sometimes this thing, and I've talked to enough people who have had it, sort of comes back at you a few times. But look, there's a situation where, and I've talked to several people who have had it that have been in contact with other people in the same room, living in the same house, traveling for hours in the same car with someone who had COVID, and they did not get it. They tested negative. So how does that happen? That's what's so weird about this. Now, you can't deny the level of death that occurred with older people in particular in New York. But look, I don't know how we get to a balancing act here with risk versus living our lives and making sure that restaurants can survive and people can survive. And we'll talk to Dan O'Donnell about this, because one thing that's interesting, he's up in the People's Republic of Wisconsin. The State Fair of Wisconsin is located right outside of Milwaukee in a place called West Allis. The racing fans, and I know Kenny Wallace knows the Milwaukee Mile right there at the State Fairgrounds, and you know what they have done there at the Mile over the years for races. And they do concerts there and stuff like that. But Tony Evers, the governor, who's a Democrat, has ordered hospital beds to be built there in case they need overflow. Wisconsin, he feels, is at a tipping point right now when it comes to hospitalization. So we'll check in with Dan, not only on the violence last night in a suburb related to another police shooting, but also on that issue. So that's still to come here this afternoon. I mentioned Dr. Presti. We have an audio cut of the day. And ladies and gentlemen, at 4:20 this afternoon, everything that you've ever wanted to know about stink bugs, but we're afraid to ask. It's my favorite segment today. 4:20. Total Information PM on KMOX. Carol has the news at the top of the hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.